In a constantly changing world, today is as simple as it gets. You're listening to The Leadership Enigma, a podcast to explore, experiment, and power up your leadership to make the difference to your business, your people, and your success. Whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or corporate executive, each week we dig deep into global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts, and disruptors. Now, here's your host, Adam Pacifico.
So welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. And I'm excited that I have the wonderful Julia Carter with me today. Now, I've had the privilege of actually working with Julie at another organization, but now I've kind of twisted her arm to come and join me on The Leadership Enigma. So welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to
have a conversation with you.
Oh, that's quite flattering in itself. I think I might stop there. But I want people to know a little bit about you. I know a little bit about you, obviously. That you're a sociologist by training. You did your PhD.
I did really finish. The technical term is dropout, I think. I did 4 years. How's that for an intro?
That's a brilliant intro.
Or a headline or title. I did 4 years of my PhD in sociology.
But that's so the background.
They do grant you a master's if you stay in long enough.
I love the fact that we found out something new already and we're about 30 seconds
in. Yeah, so I did my time. I am a sociologist by training. So it's really kind of the lens through which I look at the work that I do. Frankly, the kind of work that you and I both do, Adam.
So, okay. Well, we know that...
sitting back in the background of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good, actually, because as I say, you and I have had the chance to work together on multiple projects. Yeah. And really, you zone in now on organizational culture, strategy, and leadership, and you're currently with Triad Consulting Group.
I am... Yes.
So just give us an overview of really some of the things that you're focusing on right now.
Sure. So Triad is an amazing group of people whose area of expertise or specialization is in helping organizations and individuals improve their ability to navigate difficult conversations.
Okay.
Whether that difficult conversation is a performance review or giving feedback or getting feedback or negotiating for resources and trying to figure out the terms of a partnership or a deal or negotiating where the holidays are going to be spent. All of these are kinds of sort of difficult conversations that we help people sort of step into more confidently, I think, with the tools to actually have the conversation. Because if I were to give you a definition of a difficult conversation, people ask, right?
That was going to be my first question, Julie.
Perfect. See, I'm just changing roles here in this
conversation. We're in the zone.
I'll offer an experiential definition of a difficult conversation. It is anything that you find difficult to talk about. So it actually could differ between you and I. So saying no to somebody might be hard for me. It might be easy for you.
Okay.
So it's a difficult conversation for me. You may have different kinds of difficult conversations. If it causes anxiety or concern or makes you feel tense, or frankly, if it's the conversation that you're just not having, I think some of our most difficult conversations are the ones that we avoid and aren't having at all. It falls into the bucket of a tough conversation, a tough relationship, a tough situation, a tough challenge that you're navigating.
Gotcha. So it's very personal, but I've got a question, and I'm sure I read this somewhere in some of the wonderful materials you shared with me. There's also something about a difficult conversation with yourself, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about that, because it's not just two people getting ready for a conversation. There's that internal dialogue.
Oh yeah, there's absolutely an internal dialogue. You and I are having this conversation right now. If we were talking at the exact same time, all of your listeners would, of course, stop listening. It wouldn't be downloading the podcast because it's really difficult to listen to two voices at the same time in the same conversation. And actually, I think this is part of the reason that difficult conversations are so hard is you are always listening to at least two voices. So you and I are talking to each other. I'm listening to what you have to say to me. But there's that running inner dialogue, that voice inside my head that also is saying a whole lot. And depending on how difficult the conversation is, like the internal voice might be in total rage mode, screaming expletives. Of course, it's not doing that right now, but we do. We have this internal voice that's sort of always talking. And so in fact, in any conversation, I am actually listening to at least two voices, listening to what the other person has to say, and to a large extent, listening to what's going on inside my head. And I actually think the voice inside of us, that running narrative, you know, it agrees with us, it sounds like us. In some ways, it's the more compelling voice in the conversation. So it actually grabs our attention. So there's absolutely the voice inside our head that's present in every conversation. This is not just happening for me, right? This is happening for the other person. This is happening for you too. So there's sort of many voices in a conversation. And in a difficult conversation, oftentimes there's a big gap between the things that I'm saying to you.
Yes.
What am I actually saying? What am I actually giving voice to in the conversation? There can be a really large gap between what I actually put out there and what I really think and feel, what the thing that we call the internal voice is actually saying. And the larger that gap, in some ways, the harder the conversation, because how can you and I really work through an issue? How can we actually surface what the problem is? How can we figure out the way forward if I'm not really putting out there what I think and feel, and if potentially you're not doing the same?
So we've got to be really honest with ourselves, haven't we, in relation to, are we identifying and managing that gap between what I'm thinking and what I'm saying to you? I've got to be honest with myself, haven't I?
Yeah. I think part of the skill of navigating a difficult conversation is two things. How do I access what you really think and feel, Adam? If I want to make progress on the problem, if I want to improve the relationship between us, I actually need to know what you really think and feel. So part of that is, what's my orientation towards you in the conversation? How curious am I? And we can talk a little bit more about that. How curious am I about learning about what's inside your internal voice? What do you really think and feel? That's one piece of improving the conversation. I think the other piece is, how do I negotiate? How do I have that conversation with my own internal voice so I can figure out what I want to put into the conversation, right? How do I want to take out what's inside of my head and what I really think and feel and bring it into the conversation, but also do that in a productive way? Because, you know, internal voices.
Internal dialogue. they get in the way sometimes, right?
Yeah, they're rude, they're unhelpful, they're judgmental, they're all of those things, right? So if I just suddenly ripped off the filter and literally said everything that's in my internal voice, I might actually do a lot of damage.
Wow, this could become an interesting episode, right?
So I think part of the conversation with ourselves is, can I move myself towards a stance of actually being willing to ask you some questions, being curious about what you really think and feel, where you're actually coming from?
Yes.
And can I negotiate with myself to figure out, how do I want to bring what I actually think and what I actually feel and put it out there into the conversation? And how might I do that in a way that is productive and helpful and not just damaging, right? So part of it is managing what's in my internal voice and pulling it up. Yeah. I mean, that's some of the internal, the conversation with yourself. Yeah.
There's a lot of critical skills there, aren't there? What I'm hearing, what I'm hearing is empathy, the ability to really listen, curiosity, emotional intelligence, all of that's required in abundance for this to happen. Now, I know you and Triad have done a lot of work on difficult conversations.
Yeah.
And one of the things I wanted to ask is, out of your work, you talk about actually it's three conversations in one. So help the listeners understand, what in essence are the three conversations in one that will take place in a difficult conversation?
Yeah. So my colleagues have done incredible work. Our two co-founders, I have to give them a shout out, Sheila Heen and Doug Stone, have done amazing work over, examining and researching people's conversations, right? We've listened to hundreds, if not thousands, of their conversations. And one of the things that we found is, no matter what the subject is, no matter what the problem is, no matter who's in the conversation, that every difficult conversation is really like three conversations in one. So there's sort of these three strands.
Yeah, let's go through that.
A difficult conversation. And the first is something that we call the what happened conversation.
Okay.
So this is the part of the conversation, this is the strand of the conversation that has to do with how we view what's transpired between us. How do we think about the facts? What has happened here? Why has it happened? Whose fault is it? And part of a difficult conversation or the rub between people can be that we just don't view the same situation through the same lens. We don't see it the same. We have a different point of view or conclusion on what's actually happened, why it happened, and who might be at fault when something has gone wrong between us.
So this must happen all the time between people in relation to that disparate view on what's happened.
Absolutely. It happens all the time. And, you know, if I was, think about the world that we operate in right now. I mean, I don't want to totally derail us, Adam. You're in the UK, I'm in the US. Think about some of the social issues. Think about the fact that we're living through a pandemic, right? It is remarkable to me at how different the views are on what is happening, why it's happened, how we should fix it, whether or not we should wear masks, whether or not somebody should be able to tell me to do that, right?
Don't get me started on masks.
As I said, I didn't want to derail this conversation. If we just look at the news or read a couple of different newspapers, right, we have immediate anecdotal evidence that what should strike us as the same issue, we can actually have incredibly different points of view.
Right.
On it.
Okay. So if what happened is the first part of a difficult conversation, the second part is about feelings. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I think this is a slightly deeper layer of a difficult conversation. And I'm going to sort of talk about them maybe in the context of work, where we have many hard conversations and tough working relationships or tough situations to work through. I think that work tends to be a place where we think we should be non-emotional, that to be emotional at work is to not be professional or show up in this way that's really appropriate for the workplace. But if you and I pulled out a list of emotions, a really long list of all the different kinds of emotions human beings can feel, positive and negative, we would probably check off that we have actually experienced or felt every single one of those emotions at some point in time at work or in an exchange with a colleague or a boss.
Yes.
Sometimes a customer or client.
Damn, no, we perish the thought. Perish the thought, Julie.
Right. So actually, human beings are emotional beings. A difficult conversation often arises because there's some kind of friction or tension or conflict between two people, because we actually really fundamentally disagree, perhaps, about what's happened. It could be that there's been a problem that's been festering for some time. These are situations that provoke our emotions. And I think that when we're in the midst of a difficult conversation, it's possible for us to think that the other person is making me feel this way. And I think that a lot of us don't always have the tools or the skills to figure out.
Or the courage even.
Can I actually name my emotion?
Yeah.
And not to say that like you're making me feel angry right now or you're frustrating me, but actually just to sort of name, I'm experiencing frustration. And it might be for the following reasons. Because if we don't sort of have or own our emotions, if we're not able to actually acknowledge them to one another, they really start to erode our ability to have a productive, learning-oriented conversation with one another, right? Because our emotions derail us. I mean, we literally have like a physiological reaction when we experience a strong emotion. It actually becomes tough for us to focus, to concentrate on what the other person is saying. So by not being able to name our emotions in the conversation or to feel like actually, let's deal with that. Let's acknowledge that we
put it on the table,
having some feelings and put it on the table. It is in some ways, right, affecting the conversation. It's affecting how both of us show up. It's affecting our ability to listen to one another, to hear one another. And sometimes emotions end up leaking out anyways through our tone, through our facial expressions, through our body expression.
Okay.
I'll pause there.
I know, but so for the avoidance of doubt, I'm not making Julie angry or frustrated now. That was just an example she was giving, all right? But I'm joking. So the first part of the difficult conversation is what happened, followed by feelings, which have got to be addressed. The third part is identity. Help us understand what that means, Julie.
So I think this actually is really at the heart of something you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, which is the conversation we're having with ourselves. And so we're not just in conversation with another person, but there is this ongoing conversation with ourselves.
Yep.
And much of that has to do with the story of who we are. So when we talk about identity, what we are talking about is the fact that we all have a story for who we are and how we show up in the world. It's how you might fill in the sentence, if I know nothing else about myself, I know that I am hardworking, compassionate, reliable, innovative, creative, right? I mean, everybody has these sort of descriptors that capture the essence of who they are, right? And it's sometimes a pretty long or exhaustive list depending on the different roles that we have and sort of the different spheres or arenas of life that we navigate. And one of the tough things about a relationship where we're experiencing a problem or a tough conversation is that oftentimes that conversation or perhaps the other person suggests something or says something that we feel like is in conflict with who we are. They have challenged our identity. And when that happens, right? So let's say you come to me and you have feedback for me and I feel like it's really challenging something that I think that I'm actually really good at.
Sure. That will raise some more emotions.
Yeah. Well, it will raise emotions, right? And what's sitting behind it is that threat to my identity.
Gotcha.
And when our identity is threatened, we really can sort of feel as though we're becoming undone. Two reactions that we can have, one of which is we get super defensive.
Okay.
Right? Like, how dare you suggest something about me? And the other reaction is that sense of despondency of like, oh my gosh, what if you are right? And who I thought I was is totally wrong, right? And both of those reactions find ourselves in a place where we really, in some ways, feel deeply overwhelmed, maybe even feel like we're coming unglued
right
a little bit. And
especially in a pandemic.
Yeah.
Which doesn't help.
Yeah. And it totally, first of all, in the conversation, it's going to totally erode our ability to stick with the conversation and to figure out how do we fix the problem that we're having? How do we solve this particular issue? It might even feel like this puts the relationship itself fundamentally at risk.
Yeah, that's a big piece, isn't it? So those are the three conversations in one. But let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do we always have to have the difficult conversation in the first place?
I don't think there's a formula
where
you can like plug in a set of factors and it's always going to tell you whether or not you should have the conversation. I think there is wisdom at times in possibly not having the conversation, or perhaps not having it right now. And when people are thinking about, well, how do I decide whether or not to have the conversation?
Yes.
You know, a couple of factors that you might think through or think about. One of them, I think, is it's super simple, but I actually think it's pretty profound, which are, what are my purposes? What is the purpose of this conversation, if I have it, or what would be my purposes in it?
Right.
I think the human tendency is to want to change other people, or to show them why they're wrong and why we're right. And if that's my guiding purpose, that's actually, that's probably not going to lead to a very productive conversation.
So maybe not at this time.
Yeah. And that's not a purpose within my control. Actually, you get to decide whether or not you change your mind.
Yes.
And if my purpose is just to tell you that you're wrong and that I'm right, now the outcome is probably going to be that you become more entrenched in your position. Anyways, I'm unlikely to convince you when that's the orientation or stance that I'm bringing into the conversation. So I would say for folks listening, ask yourself, what are my purposes?
Right.
If my purposes are to change the other person, I at the very least want to rethink that purpose before I go into the conversation and think about what's within my control. Within my control is something like, I actually just want to learn why we see it differently.
Well, now that's a really good segue. We are a great double act here, because I was going to say, and I know you and your colleagues at Triad have done a lot of work in how people create learning conversations instead of difficult conversations. Yeah. So in a moment, I'm going to ask how people can contact you and Triad. But can you just help us understand, what do you mean, just in general terms, about create a learning conversation from a difficult conversation?
Sure. We talked earlier about the fact that a difficult conversation really has three strands or three layers to it.
Yes.
What's happened? Why has it happened? Whose fault is it, being the first layer or strand? The second to do with the feelings that we're experiencing. What do I actually do with the feelings? Do I want to bring them into the conversation? And the third, which is identity, that conversation with myself. What are the ways in which I feel like I'm being attacked or threatened at sort of the very core of who I am in this conversation or by this person?
Yeah.
And across those three strands, there are sort of these default behaviors that humans have for how we sort of deal with those various, there's three components of a difficult conversation. So the what happened part, right? The human tendency is to want to really explain to the other person, no, this is what's happened.
Yes.
Here's why I know that I'm right about it.
Give them a piece of their mind.
Exactly. It really is your fault, to sort of be oriented around blame and pointing the finger. And when the other person doesn't say, oh yeah, you're right. I am wrong. You are right. It did happen the way that you see it, right? How often does that really happen?
Yeah.
When the other person doesn't react that way, our default is to just advocate more, to explain louder, or with sort of a different frame on why I'm right and why you're wrong. And one of the shifts that we really want to encourage people to do in a difficult conversation is to make progress, is to shift towards creating a learning conversation. So instead of my purpose here being to explain to you why I'm right, I want to make a shift away from that certainty towards curiosity.
Right.
Actually ask a different question, which is, why do we see it differently? How did you come to the conclusion that you have? And I think something that trips us up when we're having that learning conversation is we think, well, if I ask those questions and if I'm open to being curious about why you see it the way that you do, and if I'm listening, am I actually really just agreeing with you? Am I acquiescing and letting go of my own point of view? And listening is not agreeing, but it is about learning and it is about curiosity for where you're coming from. And I think there's two outcomes there, two possible outcomes. Right. One is I have more information. At the very least, I understand where you're coming from. And it's also possible that I might adjust my own point of view. But even if I just know where you're coming from and have more information to work with, it probably opens up the aperture, the possibilities on what a way forward looks like. And the second potential outcome is, if you feel like I've listened and been genuinely curious and actually want to learn in this conversation, as opposed to be sort of stuck mm-hmm. in my point of view, you're probably more willing to listen to me. Because when people feel heard, they then are more willing to listen and to hear what you might have to say. So that shift gotcha. In towards the learning conversation of, you know what, my job here is not to let go of my position, but is actually just to learn more about how we each see it, why we're each coming to it in these ways, how you are feeling about it. What are the ways in which your own identity or that other person's identity
yes.
might be threatened? All of that offers us information and the ability to think about, I shouldn't say all of that offers us information, but actually offers us the opportunity to have mutual understanding.
And really have that two-way conversation.
Totally. Gotcha. And that's a place from which we can start to figure out what it looks like to mutually problem solve.
Now, Julie, I know we've only scraped the tip of the iceberg, and I think this is so relevant to everybody all the time, but especially at the moment in, in what I can only describe as the world is slightly bonkers.
Yeah.
So how can people get in touch with you and Triad? Because I think lots of people are going to want to know more. And I know you've got some amazing resources, some amazing research. So how do they get hold of you?
Sure. So everybody can find me on LinkedIn. Julie Okada, OKADA, on LinkedIn. So you can find me there.
Okay.
You can reach me at Okada at DIFFCON, DIFFCON.com.
Oh, you've actually got an email that is DIFFCON. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, right? Totally. Okada at DIFFCON.com. And then, of course, you can also look up Triad's website.
Yes.
Which is triadconsultinggroup.com.
triadconsultinggroup.com. Connect with Julie, connect with Triad. They are experts on this. I have learnt loads by talking to you, by reading some of the materials that you very kindly sent me. So here's my final question to you is, what would be your best piece of advice to a 21-year-old Julie Okada? Ha-ha!
Oh, this was in one of your, I listened.
Yes, you see? You should know these by now because you've listened to some of the episodes. So best advice to a 21-year-old Julie.
So I would tell 21-year-old Julie that you absolutely do not know how things are going to turn out. And they are fundamentally going to turn out totally different
yes.
than you think they are right now.
Ain't that the truth?
and even though you will work really hard to control them and to make them, to will them to be the way you want them to be or think they ought to have been, everything will be as it should be.
Yeah, that's very, very true. What's your favorite word? Yeah, I even sung that at you as well, which is slightly odd.
But... Damn it. Okay, what is a favorite word? Well, you know, when you're living in the middle of a global pandemic and things are what they are right now in the US, I mean, a lot of the favorite words that come to mind are four letters, Adam.
And that's the best answer I've had so far to that question. So we're going to leave it right there.
How's that for answering the question but not answering it at all?
It's my favorite answer to that particular question. So that's definitely staying in this podcast. Listen, you've been an absolute star for taking the time to chat to me in relation to difficult conversations. I hope people connect and come visit you, certainly at Triad, and get more answers to this conundrum in relation to have a learning conversation as opposed to just a difficult conversation, because it's unavoidable for all of us.
They are unavoidable and they are increasingly common in today's environment. So thank you for this, Adam. This
was my pleasure.
So wonderful.
Thank you for joining the Leadership Enigma.
Thank you.
Join us again next week for more essential insights on the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with your host on LinkedIn or via our website, www.pca-global.com. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for listening.